It's springtime here, which means it's mattress season, and mattresses are sprouting up everywhere I look outside. I'm kidding, of course, but if Mother Earth did grow mattresses on trees, she would grow avocado green mattresses, as they use sustainably sourced organic natural materials. As the season also brings the warm weather with it, I'm quickly reminded how important temperature is to our sleep quality. Staying cool overnight makes a big difference, and organic natural bedding sleeps cooler than the cheaper synthetic alternatives. For those who thought avocado only makes mattresses, they also make the most luxuriously soft bedding to keep you cool and comfy while catching those restful Z's. Whether you are looking for organic cotton, natural linen, down, or even silk, Avocado Mattress has everything you would want to upgrade your sleeping environment. Investing in better sleep always pays off. Head to avocadomattress.com today to save 10% on all bedding and 50% on clearance bedding. Avocado, dream of better. Remember when I talked about True Diagnostics True Age test? Well, I took it myself and the results are in. I found out my biological age, which directly predicts my risk for serious diseases. Here's why that matters. Research shows that if your biological age is even just 5 years older than your actual age, your risk of developing diseases like cancer or heart disease can jump by as much as 30 to 50%. The good news is, nearly 90% of biological aging is in your hand. Yes, it's driven by things like your lifestyle, which means you have a lot of control over it. I was pleased to see my biological age was 6 years younger than my chronological age. That felt like a big win because I've definitely put a lot of time and attention on improving my lifestyle habits so they are more aligned with my health goals. The test also showed a few areas to work on and even pointed out a low level of riboflavin or vitamin B2, which plays a huge role in energy metabolism. It's strange because I felt there was something inhibiting my energy, and now I have a simple theory I can test. The True Age test didn't just give me a number, it showed how quickly my heart, brain, liver, and immune system are aging. The test itself was super easy and convenient. I did it from home, no doctor visit or big needles, just a quick, painless finger prick. You send off that tiny sample in a prepaid package, and in about 2 to 3 weeks, you'll get a detailed online report. If you care about protecting your health and want to find out what your real age is, head over to TrueDiagnostic.com and use my code MINDFUL to get 20% off your entire order or subscription. That's TrueDiagnostic.com and use code MINDFUL at checkout to get 20% off. Your future self will thank you.
The eyes and the head together. So all of that to say is we can drive our movements with our eyes and our head, because every muscle in your body is connected to the movements of your head because of your vestibular system. So the more often we use our eyes and our head, the more we keep our vestibular system activated, and we keep those reflexive connections throughout our entire body sharp. And remember, the kid has that riding reflex, right? So the center of a human's body is intimately connected to the movements of the head. And that's through that riding reflex, gaining head control when that child is putting that big giant watermelon on the horizon, when it's having tummy time and belly time and back time. That is really strengthening the child's center, the core.
Tim Anderson, thank you for joining me on the Mindful Movement Podcast.
Les, thanks for having me, man. I appreciate it.
It is an honor to meet you again. We actually met about a decade ago, give or take. And your work has had a tremendous impact on not only my life, but the lives of my clients along the way. And I am truly grateful for what you have, for the message that you have been spreading for these last 10 or 15 years or so. So thank you for all that.
Oh man, that's cool. And you just reminded me of when I met you for the first time, and that was back when I was still wet behind the ears. just you know, that was the beginning of trying to share original strength.
Well, I had been following your work before we met, and then my coach at the time, it was in Maryland, hosted one of your, I guess, workshops. Mm-hmm. So I couldn't really pass the opportunity to go to one of those workshops in basically my backyard. So I went there. And I remember you had a tremendously positive energy that radiated off to you. It was just an uncommon type of energy, and it was very welcoming. And I remember the course you gave. I had already been practicing it, but I learned some different things there. But it was a neat model that you had, where in the workshop everybody did like a self test, where we just did a squat, And then you went through all these different patterns and activities that you had been working on and teaching others. And then you would just periodically retest your squat. And there'd be like transformations, like over the course of an hour or two, people's, you know, whole nervous system, their whole structures would just behave differently. And those ideas I have used as a foundation, as like an anchor in my own movement practice over these last 10, 15 years that are like so central. They're so central to the whole, to everything else I do and everything that I've been working on in my own gym over the years to help others. It's really had a tremendous impact. And like I said, I'm just really grateful that you're out there putting it out there and helping people. It's really touched my life very with a lot of purpose.
That's wonderful to hear. Thank you. That pretty much makes my day right there.
You founded Original Strength, this, I guess, model that helps people, as you say, press reset on their body. It's a common term. There was one word that I didn't really ever hear about until I met you. And then I heard it like I heard it everywhere after that. It was the vestibular system. And I remember you teaching us to, I guess, tap into the vestibular system, cultivate. I don't know what the terminology was, but if you don't mind, I'd like to start off with what does it mean to press reset, and what the heck is the vestibular system in your mind?
All right. So to press reset is just like you would. I don't know if your listeners had ever played a Nintendo before. Some might not even know what that is. But when the Nintendo game was not working right, it had a reset button on it, and you would press it, and it would reset the operating system, and then the game worked the way it was supposed to. And if that didn't work, you just took the cartridge out, blew on it, slapped it on your thigh, and put it back in the machine. But you basically reset the operation so that the game performed as it was intended. Our bodies are way more complicated than that, but we do have certain movements that are embedded in our nervous system that if we do those movements, it's kind of like pressing a reset button on our nervous system, and it kind of clears out the noise or the misinformation or the information that's causing the brain distress. And at the speed of a person's nervous system, it instantly soothes the brain or tells the brain I'm safe. And it allows the brain to remove the inhibitions from the body and the nervous system. And then the body just moves so much better. So it is almost as if we have reset buttons that we just press and then everything just works better.
So these patterns, these are basically tapping into developmental sequence patterns that we all encounter in the first year or so of our life. Where
yes.
We all just seem to know to do the same thing, even though none of the adults in our life have to tell us to do it.
Yeah. So we come out with a fully functioning pre-programmed operating system that is designed to carry us through a series of movements that builds our brain. And as it builds our brain, it actually also builds our body. And so the brain and the body kind of work in a chicken and egg effect. As one grows, it grows the other. And as the other grows, it grows the other. So they feed off of each other. Anyway, we came into the world with certain movements that were already embedded in our nervous system. And the beautiful thing about that is, and I'm sure you know this and everyone listening has heard this, that if you don't use it, you lose it. In the nervous system, that's called pruning. So if we don't use something in our nervous system gets rid of it, unless we were born with it. So we can't lose what we were born with. We only can lose what we created. And that's the beautiful thing about our nervous system is, so those movements, no matter if you're 99 or 1 year old, they're in your nervous system. And if you engage in them, they do the same things for you if you're 99 that they did for you when you were one.
That's fascinating. I remember you even mentioning that some of it like begins before we're born.
Yes.
When you're in the womb, just the movement of sloshing around in your mom's belly basically is nourishing the brain in some way. Like there's information coming in created from that movement.
Absolutely. And that's where the vestibular system comes in, because that is our first sensory system to develop. And it starts developing 21 days after conception, and it's fully developed 5 months after conception. So all the movements that your mom makes, but not just like just her heartbeat, her breathing, her laughing, her sneezing, her snoring, anything your mom does creates vibration and information that goes through the child's vestibular system and helps build the brain. So everything your mom does for that 4 months until you're born, all that information helps shape and build your brain and your nervous system too.
So that's where we're picking up like our sense of where we are in space, like our spatial awareness.
So your vestibular system is a simple way to look at it is your balance system. But it's so much more than that. And a more complicated way to look at it is kind of like your information crossroads system. So your sense of awareness in space, that's going to be your proprioceptive system. And it dances and is married to the vestibular system, because both of those together combine like all the information that the brain's looking for, where your body is in space, plus your sense of stability and balance. And you know, what side is up or down, what's left or right. Am I moving? Am I not moving? So your vestibular system controls that, detects that information, and your proprioceptive system, that comes from all the sensory cells in your body. So like every place of your body, like all your skin, your joints, your fascia, your muscles, they all have sensory cells in them. And when they move, that detects information, and that helps. So that's where your proprioceptive system comes from. Anyway, when we move, we're combining the information from our proprioceptive system and our vestibular system, and we're painting a wonderful picture in our brain, or giving our brain a great movement map for where the body is and what it's doing.
Gotcha. So how did you find that there was something like magical to this for you?
Oh, man.
And improve your felt experience in life?
So this is where it gets weird. So for me, it was an answer to a prayer. I was a knucklehead. And I was engaging in a lot of overtraining. I would not let my body rest. And I was the guy that had to show up at the gym every single day, no matter what. If I was hurt, it didn't matter. I was going to the gym. If I was sick, had the flu, I'm going to the gym. So anyway, I developed some overuse injuries along the way. And instead of letting my body recover, I decided I was going to learn how to do corrective exercises, which didn't really help me, because I was just stacking corrective exercise on top of the exercise I was already doing, but not allowing my body to do the one thing it needed. So one night, when all of that didn't work, I was just having a pity party, and I just felt kind of depressed, because I was like, well, I want to feel like Superman, but I don't feel like Superman, and I just can't fix myself. So I asked God to show me how to train to be bulletproof like Superman. And within 1 to 2 weeks, I picked up a book on learning disorders in children. And I was just flipping through the pages, and God just kind of connected the dots for me. And this is a crazy thing, if that's not crazy. I knew that I knew that I knew before I even got on the floor and started crawling on my hands and knees, that was the one thing I needed to do that was just going to make everything better. Like I had a conviction about it before I even did it. So it's not that I did it and then I learned. I knew and then I did it, and it continued to prove itself to be that way. So it's a wild story, but that's pretty much how it happened.
That's awesome. Yeah. So it came from a book about learning disorder.
So that book was called Smart Moves. And it was written by a lady named Carla Hannaford.
Hannaford. Okay. That's great. I mean, I've been pitching for years now, which has really been born out of what I've learned through Original Strength and some like adjacent modalities, that if there is a fountain of youth from a movement perspective, it's doing what the youthful do, like,
yeah,
getting on the floor and doing baby like things. And now I've gravitated at the gym to have clients that are middle-aged guys, is probably my most common client, that just want to feel better. They finally have like a little time in their life, a little bit of money to invest in that. And then it's not long before you get a story where, like, I was with my grandkids and I noticed them doing this and I'm on the floor with them. And it's like one of the more rewarding types of feedback I get from that field of work. You know, it's like that's what it's about. But what's cool is that they are, it's not just that their ability to get down and get more out of their life by connecting with, you know, their dearest loved ones. It's that they're even observing, like they're becoming observers. And
yes,
Original Strength has made me an observer of kids. And one thing that really stands out to me too is when you're watching like these patterns that we, you know, that we all have kind of hardwired, I guess, they're not always like the path of least resistance. Like, you'll, I've seen, there's stages in like 4 or 5 months where you'll see a child do things that are really hard. And if you ask an adult to do it, they're really humbling. And it's like, well, how, it's one thing to know what to do, but they know to do something that's really hard. Like, they're not taking this, the easiest path to get there. Like, and I find that fascinating.
No, and that's the brilliance of the design, right? So strength is born through struggle. And it's not even that the child knows to do it. It is being called to do it. It is being driven to do it because it has these reflexes programmed into it. Like, the craziest thing is the child's head is the size of a, compared to its body, is like the size of a watermelon. So it's very unproportionally balanced between its head and its body. And so a child's head weighs 33% as much as its body. But that child has a riding reflex that demands he puts his eyes and head on the horizon. So now imagine you weighed 100 pounds, but you had a 33-pound head and you're on the floor and you've got this reflex demanding that you hold your eyes and head up on the horizon. Like, that is really where strength is born. Like, that is insane amount of strength that a child develops, because eventually they get really good at holding that eyes and head on the horizon, and they can do it like all day long until they get sleepy and take a nap. And then they, as soon as they wake up, they're back at it again. But that would wear an adult out. Like, it would, I actually tried it. And I have a little head now comparative to my body, right? Like, an adult, the proportions change as you grow older. So just holding my little head up I tried to do it for 5 minutes straight one day, just like a child does. And I was so sore for 2 days on my entire backside. I was amazed.
Yeah, I have one of those head weights. I think I got it from like a boxing company. I think it's like Ringside.
Ringside.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
And I think it's 8 pounds. So even with that, you're not even approaching what it would be for a baby. And, you know, it definitely increases the challenge in a very interesting way. But what's interesting about it too, it's very like self-correcting. Like, when you put it on, and I don't do it all, I probably use it once a month or something, but the feedback you get is extraordinary and it's very unique. It can't be recreated with other tools. And, you know, it's, I don't know, a $20 or $30 tool, but it's very interesting. And I've used it on clients where they have trouble like holding their head stable in space. And, you know, it's such an important part of like posture and navigating your body in space, is like controlling the control center, if you will.
Right.
And it's amazing what happens when you put weight on the head, the feedback they get, like, it coaches them. Like, you don't need to use words. It's going to be a better coach for them because they're going to feel like if their head's out of position, it doesn't feel good.
Right.
So it's like self-correcting. And that's an interesting thing for people to experience and for an observer to watch. Like, oh, you know, you don't need me. You don't need a personal trainer. You need 8 pounds on your head. Save some money. it is the coach, if you will.
Yeah. So the body knows how to align itself and stack itself up and how to adjust its posture. But sometimes it just needs extra load or extra weight to get that sense to turn those reflexes on. Just by adding a load to the head or even to other movement patterns, some of those developmental movement patterns, that creates a reflexive response that the body says, oh yeah, I know how to do this. I know exactly how to position myself now. Yeah. And it does make you a good coach because you don't have to say anything.
Right. It's interesting you say load. I mean, one thing I've gathered from following you over the years is there's an imagination and creativity around how to apply external feedback and loads to these patterns that, granted, we, you know, as a kid, we don't really have any loads other than the gravity. You know, you're in the natural space. You got ground, space, three planes, and gravity and your body. But as an adult, you know, that will become, if you just tinker with those things, it doesn't necessarily, it'll be very nourishing. It'll be very useful. You know, I recommend it highly for the forever. But there will be parts where you're not necessarily getting the stimulus you need to maybe get better, to translate to maybe something that's more challenging, that you're doing more sports specific or hobby specific. But you have a creative way of just finding a way to put load onto these patterns. I mean, whether it's like drag, you know, you might be crawling, but you're dragging something.
Right.
And what a powerful impact that has. Like, what do you have, like, some favorite go-tos that you personally do? Because it seems like you're a bit of a minimalist in a way.
I go through seasons, you know, like sometimes I get curious and I want to play with things, but yeah. So, you can add load to the developmental patterns. And it's a really interesting way to get ridiculously strong. So, like I am convinced a person could be just as strong as they ever wanted to be or imagine themselves to be through just playing with crawling and loading crawling in different ways. So you can put on a harness and drag a sled or something heavy while you crawl. You can put on a weight vest while you crawl. You can tie chains to your wrist and your ankles while you crawl. Just like there's no limit. You can put on that head weight you're talking about and crawl. That is brutal, by the way. Oh my goodness. And one of the greatest things you can do is increase gravity while you crawl. And the way you would do that would be to crawl down a hill, forward, and then try to crawl back up the hill backwards. That is insane. But it makes you so strong and so resilient, and really it gives you access to your strength at the same time that it's also fortifying your strength and weaving your body together.
Right. And, you know, before we dive deeper into that, maybe we could just touch on what are some of these patterns. You've mentioned crawling there, and that is, there's something definitely magical that takes place when you practice crawling, and there's many ways to approach it. But what are some of the other patterns that you feel are like hardwired?
So in OS, we talk about five resets, five major patterns. And the first one is like, you're like, really, that's a pattern? But breathing. Breathing is the first movement that we should master. We were born breathing a certain way, and that's actually the way we're supposed to breathe throughout our entire lives. Most of us just don't after about age 3 or 4 or 5. We alter it. We compensate our breathing pattern. The next reset would be head control, like controlling the movements of your eyes and your head. That is extremely important. And remember, every child has that writing reflex. But in today's modern world, with all the distractions we have, the world is calling our eyes and head to be motionless or still or look down in a flex position, which is not what we're designed to do whatsoever. So that's the second reset. The third reset would be rolling on the floor, just spending time on the floor and rolling, learning how to roll around and letting your body learn how to articulate and segment and also just to stimulate all those proprioceptors we were talking about in the skin, the fascia, the muscles, and the joints. And then the fourth reset would be rocking back and forth. Easiest way is to rock on your hands and knees. That is so restorative. And every child, when they get strong enough to push the world away, that's when they get up on their hands and knees, and that's where they develop their posture. Just that position alone, being on the hands and knees, is what sets our curves in our spine, our cervical curve and our lumbar curve. It's where an adult can return to try to get those curves back and restore their posture. And then after that is crawling. Crawling is like the last reset, which is really the gateway to the ultimate human reset, which would be walking. But walking can't be a reset for people if they aren't tied together well and they don't live in their design. But so those are the five resets: the breathing, the head control, the rolling, the rocking, and the crawling.
Let's touch on all these a little bit, if you don't mind. So
yeah.
You say we all come out breathing properly, and then in a few years that gets compromised.
Yes.
What usually happens?
We're born obligate nasal breathers, which means that we're designed to breathe in and out of our nose. We're designed so that our tongue rests on the roof of our mouth. What that means, and we're designed to fill our lungs up from the bottom. What that means is we're not designed to breathe through our mouths. We're not designed to breathe up into our chest only, and through the very shallow region of our chest, using our neck muscles and our chest muscles. So I think what happens is we learn fear. We learn, like, you know, when you get sprayed, you learn how to compensate. We get overly stressed out. We get further and further away from our design, because humans are born to be movers. And about age 4 or 5, we try to teach humans how to be sitters or sedentary, but that's not our design at all. So if we start at such a young age, then we're kind of everything that we tied together and wove together so tightly and so beautifully when we were a child, at about 4 or 5, we're trying to teach the child how to unravel all of that and how to pull all the strings apart, right? So somewhere in childhood, in school, through whatever we're taught, learned, compensations, we become, most of us, not all of us, some of us become mouth breathers. We learn how to relax the tongue and get it off the roof of the mouth. So we end up compensating our breathing patterns. We start breathing up with our neck muscles and our chest muscles, which are their accessory breathing muscles, and they're important, but they're not supposed to be our default breathing muscles. They're for emergencies only. But what they do when we breathe with those, they tell the brain a clear message that I am not safe. And so that throws us into sympathetic fight or flight mode, and then we live there. And so what should be a good thing that's for emergencies only, to get us out of emergencies and out of harm's way, ends up being a perpetual thing that fries the body, overstresses the body, taxes the body out, and inflames the body. So then it's like the train is off the rails, so to speak. And it starts around the time kid goes to school or daycare. And honestly, in today's world, it may actually start sooner, because we give kids tablets. We teach them how to sit still. And when they're 3, we try to occupy their attention. We babysit them with technology. We do all these other things that we're not designed to do. So that's how breathing goes off the rails, though.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, it's crazy how much we know that, like, chronic stress is associated with, like, all the things that take us out, and how this thing that everybody does all the time can be, like, dysfunctional and then mediated through our hormonal system, alter metabolic pathways, and have, like, really far-reaching benefits. But on the flip side is that we have, like, the ultimate control, because it's a system that, yeah, it'll run in the background. The autonomic system will keep you alive, but it has this unique quality where we can take controls over and manipulate it. And as we practice it, whatever you practice gets stronger. So you can really change the way that your breath is, the way that you're breathing, and thus the way it's affecting your overall sense of well-being, by re-engaging and, like, taking the controls, not all the time, but just periodically, to retrain that and kind of supersede the software with some, well, I don't want to say new software, but, like, as you say, by remembering the software, by just coming home to what was already there, to remembering. Yeah. It's like we forget that we are forgetting how to do it.
We get distracted. I think that's the thing. We're so unique among all the other animals in the world, because we actually end up with a choice of how we're going to build our nervous system and how we're going to build our body. Most all other animals, as long as we don't mess with them, pretty much live in their design. But the human has the opportunity to choose whether or not he does live in his design. So, like, we can totally be connected with our body in the world, or we can totally be disconnected from our body in the world.
Yeah, we've messed a lot of animals in messing with them too along the way.
But, like, you know, a lion only truly knows how to be a lion. A human should know how to be a human, only we get distracted and we get unplugged from that. So we can choose not to be a human, like, not to live in our design.
You already touched on head control a little bit, but when you brought it up a moment ago, you mentioned the eyes. What is the importance of the eyes in this process?
So the body is designed to follow the head, and the head follows the eyes. So, and when we're a child, like, a child's laying on the floor and it hears a noise, so it turns, it uses its eyes and then its head to try to find the noise. So it starts wiring the eyes and the head together. So all of that to say is we can drive our movements with our eyes and our head, because every muscle in your body is connected to the movements of your head because of your vestibular system. So the more often we use our eyes and our head, the more we keep our vestibular system activated, and we keep those reflexive connections throughout our entire body sharp. And remember, the kid has that riding reflex, right? So the center of a human's body is intimately connected to the movements of the head. And that's through that riding reflex, gaining head control when that child is putting that big giant watermelon on the horizon, when it's having tummy time and belly time and back time. That is really strengthening the child's center, the core. So one of the secrets to having core strength is just having a healthy vestibular system and having head control. So anyway, our eyes also help give us stability, because your visual system is attached to your vestibular system, and those two work together to create a right side up world for yourself.
It's something I've noticed over the years. People, especially older folks, can really have a lot of difficulty with. Like, I'll try to incorporate the eye movements into like rolling patterns and other things, but I've noticed that some people really struggle. Like,
yes,
to get the eye to move independently, or to really just have control over that, the eyes. And it's interesting because you'll see this in people that are jacked up. Like, it's not a coincidence. Like, they'll come in and they have a lot of structural issues, a lot of, you know, very poor general mobility. And then you ask them to move their eyes, and it's like they're just learning a foreign language all of a sudden.
So we have, like, again, our world is wonderful and I love it. But we've got distractions. So we learn how to keep our eyes still, like with a screen, with a TV, with a windshield, with whatever. We've learned how to fix our gaze. Some people, because they have glasses, they don't move their eyes outside of their frame of reference, right? Because they can't see, right? So then they get used to just keeping their eyes in this very small range of motion. But your eyes have these muscles that can move them everywhere. And those movements, like if you sit there right now and you just take your eyes all the way left and all the way right, you will more than likely feel your neck try to move, because your eyes are saying, hey, let's go, we're moving. Right. And your neck is trying to respond. Like, so yeah, but, and people, as they get older, especially if they day in, day out, they don't move their eyes, that those connections and those reflexes get really rusty and dusty. And they may lose access to it, or they may have to relearn how to do it. It takes intentional practice to get there, and they can get there. And the cool thing about that is then if they can do it, they can turn the clock back. So people don't age because they circle the sun. They age because they stop moving. And we will all get older, and things, you know, are slower as you get older, and they're not like they were when you were two. But you can keep your quality of life by engaging in your design. And what you see when you see old people shuffling or with a really wide stance or on a rocker, and you see them always looking down, they're looking down to see the ground for stability. They are afraid, their brain's afraid to hold their head up on the horizon because it doesn't even know where that is probably half the time, because the vestibular system hasn't been activated. You know, the conventional wisdom used to be that as you get older, your vestibular system deteriorates, but it only deteriorates because you're not using it. If you keep it, if you use it, you keep it functional. And then it's healthy. And then you see old people walking around with extreme balance, you know, without needing a walker, with their head on the horizon, with their arms and shoulders swinging together. So a lot of times our deterioration is just a result of disuse or neglect.
Right. The eyes are interesting. I had a, let me see if I get it right. EMDR specialist on years ago.
Yeah. So, yep.
And it was interesting because it was like, I'm going to botch this, I'm sure, and skip a lot of things, but the eyes were like tapping right into the brain where it can essentially press reset or like nourish the vagal nerve and create a sense of safety. And
yes,
and using these exercises of just eye movements where you're essentially just going side to side, in the context of maybe dealing with a stress or something, mental and emotional stress, and it would like kind of rewire the brain's and body's interpretation of an event. So something that might be a common like trigger for you historically could be turned into not trigger you just by incorporating eye movements. There's something soothing that happens. There's also, I remember a book my wife had laying around. It was like, the power of healing the vagus nerve or something like that. But most of the stuff in the book was just like, look this way and then look that way.
Right.
You know, hold for 30 seconds. It was all just eye stuff. And I remember tinkering with it one phase, and it works. Like, you're stressed out, so you look left, you look right, 30 seconds each, whatever, and you're less stressed.
And that's a reset. And so the cool, and this is what I failed to mention. So pressing reset is nothing more than helping the body operate optimally. It's healing. Like, the body is designed to heal. It's designed to repair itself. It's designed to function optimally. And simple things like breathing the way you're designed to breathe, moving your eyes often, like when a child is learning how to get itself up on the floor with all that tummy and floor time, it is so curious. Anything that moves causes it to check it out and move its eyes. It's always looking around. It doesn't just like stare in one spot and never move its eyes and head. And so if we return to those simple things, man, it is so soothing for the body. And your body's not, you can't separate your body out from any part of you. So your mind and your emotions are greatly affected by how you move. And how you move is greatly affected by your mind and your emotions. So if you can heal your body and make it move optimally, you can heal your soul so that you feel optimally, because you can't separate the two. So just moving your eyes left and right can soothe your soul. It can set your body free to move in better ways, but it can also calm your mind and your emotions and regulate your brain.
Right. Yeah, it's an overlooked thing to work with. Even just the act, like I guess we could all resonate with the idea of like, you're staring at a screen. It's not good for your eyes. Like, there's a strain that happens. We're not supposed to be, I mean, it's good that we can focus on something close, but we're not supposed to be focusing on a fixed thing that's close over time. Like, we're supposed to, our eyes are there to like take in all kinds of information. And just the act of like putting screens aside, just the act of being inside, and you don't realize that the farthest your eyes are focusing might be, you know, 20 feet or whatever.
Right.
And like, even that plays a role. And just being outside and letting, without doing any work, but just like letting the information from far away come in is very nourishing to like the whole system.
It's like playing Grover, near and far, near and far from Sesame Street. But like, you know, just looking, focusing on something up close and then focusing on something far away, that's exercising the muscles of your eyes too. Like, that's movement.
Right.
And most, it's information.
People probably use more relaxation of the eyes and letting it gaze farther and farther. Which, if you live in like a city, is probably hard to do. I have this one. Delicious meat, nutritious. Crack into a good source of protein with tasty, healthy, wonderful pistachios. Wonderful pistachios is a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids. In fact, each 1 ounce serving of Wonderful pistachios contains 6 grams of protein. Pistachios have got to be the tastiest nut. Pistachios are delicious. They pack a nutritional punch and are oddly fun to eat. It's like a little dopamine drop every time you hear that shell crack open. Personally, I like them roasted and salted, but you can find your favorite shell or no shell variety at wonderfulpistachios.com. Whether you're running between meetings or dropping off the kids, Wonderful Pistachios are the snack that works as hard as you do. Check out wonderfulpistachios.com to learn more about this healthy, tasty snack. It's kind of wild how easy it is to feel disconnected from where our food comes from these days. We grab something off the shelf, toss it in the cart, and that's that. But every now and then, you come across something that reminds you, hey, real people grew this. Here's something real for you. 90% of American-grown frozen red raspberries, they come from a tight-knit community of farmers in Washington State. These are multi-generational family farmers, folks who've been working the land for decades, taking real pride in every berry they grow. This isn't just farming, it's legacy. It's local and it's done with heart. These frozen Washington red raspberries are honestly juicy, delicious, and full of flavor because they're grown in nutrient-rich soil and frozen right at peak ripeness. It feels good to enjoy something that's not only high quality, but also backed by care, tradition, and purpose. These berries, they're not just tossed in a freezer. They're grown with intention by people who've dedicated their lives to perfecting them. From sustainable farming to state-of-the-art freezing techniques, everything is done to lock in flavor and nutrition. Whether you're cooking, baking, smoothie making, or eating straight from the bag, frozen Washington red raspberries give you the real taste of American farming. And yeah, you can tell the difference.
Go to redras.org and look for Product of the U.S. to learn more.
One exercise I'll do outside where I'll look into like the forest and I'll look at two trees. And then I'll just keep looking at the tree that's farther, that's between those two trees. And then that gives me two new trees. And then I look at the tree that's farther between those. And I just slowly work my gaze as far as I can until it's just, you know, blurry mess, whatever. And then work my way back. Just like little things. But like, you can't even do that inside. You know, you can't
create a house of mirrors with trees.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. All right. Next one. Rolling. Rolling is, again, there is, I don't know how to say it, but there's magic in it.
Rolling feels amazing. And rolling is where we start combining the proprioceptive system with the vestibular system. But rolling, man, that just soothes your whole body. But it also teaches your body how it's designed to move. And the most, and it took me years to figure this one out, but rolling is actually the beginning of your gait pattern. It is crawling before crawling is crawling. So when we learn to roll, we're tying our body together. We're crossing midline. We're tying our right shoulder to our left hip and our left shoulder to our right hip, which further strengthens us so that we can start to push the world away and get up on our hands and knees. Right. But the other thing rolling does is it teaches your spine how to rotate. The human spine is made to rotate, which is one of that's almost like a negative word for an older person. Oh, I can't rotate. I don't want to rotate. The doctor said, don't rotate, which that's one of the most nourishing things you can do for the spine is to let it articulate the way it's designed to move. And rolling is where we can gently and easily, safely learn to do that again. And it tells the brain where everything's at in the body. All that stimulation you get from laying on the floor and from rolling around, it's like you're being your own foam roller, but you're giving your brain a flood of information about what is doing what inside of your body and what it's feeling inside of your body.
Yeah. And it also just feels good. There's something about like that basic gravitational massage you get on the floor.
That's what it is.
It's like, I mean, the foam roll, there's a whole world of like soft tissue tools, which are great in fine tuning stuff, but just the blunt object that is the ground is overlooked. It's fantastic. There's also
a poor man's myofascial release method.
There's also another quality, like when relating to gait, it's like you're disassociating one leg from the other leg, which happens every step we take. And it feels like that's where that concept is initiating, and really you're disassociating your hip from your spine, where, because in general our big movements come from like the hip and the shoulder, like where you have these ball and socket style joints that have lots of range. But in general, the spine can flex and rotate and do these things, but also there's like not a lot, it's not like where we get our big movement, there's a lot like a stability around there, like it could handle a lot of compressive force and shear force, and it has some turning and twisting, but a lot of our movement is like the spine is moving a little bit, but you get a lot of movement elsewhere, and to be able to disassociate those two areas. And as far as rotation, like there's something that feels really good about that. It's like you get these active stretches that you just don't get elsewhere. Right. It's like you're not in an orientation where you could easily incorporate that type of rotation, unless you're doing some weird, you know, strength exercise with a cable or something or some weird machine. But it's so like basic and subtle, but so useful and powerful. And you say, you know, relates to gait. People, you might not realize gait, like walking, even though it's linear in nature, like when you're just subconsciously going forward, I'm going from here to there, you are rotating every step. People might not feel, but if you were to look at your body from one step to the other, there's a lot of turning going on. It just, you might not notice it because you're going in a straight line.
Right.
Rocking. So rocking is like you get yourself up on your hands and knees. And for the listeners, it's really just that. It's rocking. It's forward. It's like rocking forward and back. So is that a staple thing? Like, I know crawling is considered like a significant, like, I don't know, what's the word for it? Like a significant milestone along the way.
Right.
Is rocking traditionally considered that too? Or just in like the context of, you know, your system and the paradigm that you're looking at as an activity to like incorporate into a routine?
No, I would say, this is weird. It's going to sound weird. I would say rocking is more of a milestone than crawling is.
Interesting.
Because all kids will develop the strength to get up on their hands and knees. Not all kids will crawl. So a lot of children skip crawling for various different reasons. But all of them will eventually get up on their hands and knees, and they'll start doing little motions like this because they're trying to figure out how to get something, or the world is such a different vantage point when they're on their hands and knees. And a lot of times you'll see this like look of just joy on their face when they get there because they know it's different. And then they just start like moving around and they learn how to start coordinating this back and forth motion between their shoulders and their hips. And what they're doing is they're activating the vestibular system, but they're teaching their shoulders and their hips how to mirror each other and play together. So really rocking is crawling without crawling, and it's crawling if you skip crawling. Because when I rock back and forth, I'm teaching my right shoulder how to do what my left hip is doing, and I'm teaching my right hip how to do what my left shoulder is doing. So I'm connecting both hemispheres of the brain just doing that. More importantly, though, I'm teaching my shoulders and hips how to stabilize the joints. And I'm teaching my spinal stabilizers how to help stabilize, you know, against a higher force of gravity. And what that really means is I'm teaching my mobilizers how to move around those joints. So when we get up on our hands and knees, we reflexively set the curves in our spine, but we also reflexively teach our joints how they're supposed to function and move together, especially as one whole body. Because what you'll notice is that all the joints flex together and extend together, not just the knees, but the shoulders, the hips, the knees, the ankles, the wrists, the spine, the pelvis. They all learn how to dance together as one whole body. And then they all learn their roles, right? So from an adult perspective, rocking is a beautiful way to help reintegrate an injured joint back into the system, to teach it how to play nice with all the other joints, you know? But again, it's where we develop our stability and mobility so that we can be fluid and move as humans.
I feel like my instinct brings me to rocking when I'm recovering after, like, if I'm doing a more traditional, like, lifting session and I have a heavy whatever, set of whatever. My gut, I just always want to drop down and rock and almost, like, use it as a quick recovery. I also noticed that I've seen people in a stress state. I've seen people I guess you'd say like on the spectrum, like tap into rocking. Like it must like there's an innate draw to rock as a soothing mechanism. And, you know, you think when you're a baby, people put you in these like chairs that like swings or rock. Like there's something like I have a giant tree swing in my backyard, and sometimes I'll just lay on that and lose time for a bit, and when I get up I'm like, I'm so relaxed. Like there's something about the repetitive just back and forth motions that people that humans like.
So the body has an innate wisdom that is far beyond our cognitive understanding, but the body knows how to self-soothe. It knows how to heal, and it knows everything that we need to do. And oftentimes, especially for those kids you're talking about, it acts to help calm them down. Like, and you'd see the same thing in an adult that loses his mind. He might start swaying or pacing back and forth. His body is trying to get his emotions to come down a notch. So it's trying to protect him.
Right.
Rocking is a soothing, protective mechanism. And so it's also one of the quickest ways to penetrate the soul. So you got breathing and you got rocking. If I were looking for two go-to things to penetrate the soul, and get a person to just have a sense of peace and well-being, I would go for those two things right there.
I could easily veer off and we could do a whole nother podcast when you mentioned that word, but I want to stay, here for a little bit longer.
Okay.
One thing that really stood out to me when I started watching you is in the quadruped position, in, you know, rock position of rocking and crawling, up until my introduction to Original Strength, when I would, you know, I had like a history of going to whether like what was yoga classes or, I mean, I was already in exercise for a while and fitness, but when people were in quadruped, there was always this like neutral spine idea that dragged into the head. And like, you were like, what would a baby do? Like, if you have your head down, you wouldn't survive. And you had your head not just up, but like way up, like as if you were trying to grow your neck longer every moment.
I think it worked.
I think it did. and I took to it. Like, I followed you on that. And it's extraordinarily different. And it makes sense. Like, you wouldn't, a baby wouldn't have their head down, their gaze down in quadruped. You wouldn't survive. You would literally bump your head on everything all the time when you're crawling around. But it changes a lot. Like you mentioned a little bit ago about setting the curves of the spine. And one thing you notice if somebody picks their head up high with the intent to like take in environmental information, like scan the horizon, look around you, survive, that it really affects instantly the other curves of the spine. It's not just the neck. You'll see the lumbar curve like true up. Well, I don't say true up, but it changed. Some people would argue it, you know, you could debate on where it should be. I don't know if there's a should, but it changes when your head is up. And it makes sense to have the head up out of basic survival. How did you know to do that? Or how did that come about? Because did you learn that from somebody, or is that just kind of listening within?
No, so that was like, so when this all started, like my, you know, Jeff Newbert and I, we just played around a lot, but we also had this book from, Sally Goddard Blythe. It was about reflexes in children. And, you know, it was about the riding reflex and the eyes and head are on the horizon. And then, you know, like you said, once you get into this, you start becoming observers, just looking at children. And then looking at dogs and cats and lions, like all the other animals, like where's their head most of the time, you know? And it just made sense to me because the brilliance of a child is a child is super smart. And like you said, if they crawl around with their head down all the time, they're going to bump into everything. But why does an adult do it? why are we afraid? And if a child builds its resilience by doing that, why are we think that an adult is so fragile that it shouldn't do that? You know, like what changes? If we're bigger and stronger, how did we become more fragile? And where it's no longer safe to hold your head up on the horizon, right? So I think it was just a big culmination of, again, God connecting the dots, playing around with the movements, hanging out with Jeff, reading Sally Goddard's Blythe books about reflexive development in children, and then just looking at my own children. And then watching other children play around where I was like, you know, it makes so much sense.
Right. You even notice as a kid changes around where they're moving and their levels changing. So they might be going from, you know, from a quadruped to a seated position to standing back down. The head is like in real time, just constantly level. So it stays up, even though the body could be changing orientations like rapidly, there's this like self-correcting, self-leveling mechanism that's always, it's like everything's moving around the head. It's all pivoting around the head position.
Yes. And that's our design. And you see the ultimate expression in that in a gymnast. You know, somebody doing all the tumbling and the crazy things on the floor, or a diver, like that all revolves around the head and where the head is and where the guy gaze is. Like if you watch them, they're leading the flips and the twists and the turns with their eyes and their head.
I wonder where that got lost. Like I've taken so many classes and seen so many practitioners and teachers teach it just a different way. And it's like, maybe there's a benefit to that, that you're just trading, but it's like, that's not human.
Yeah. So I think we've come to a notion that we become overly concerned about getting injured. One example of that would be, hey, let's get rid of all the playgrounds at schools.
Right.
Yeah. Those things are dangerous. Hey, I know we're lifting weights. Don't move your head. Keep your head still at all times. Why? Because you don't want to get hurt. I think we take ideas from exercise and incorrectly apply them to just movement and life in general. And they may have, I'm not saying they don't have merit in the exercise world, and they may, but they don't necessarily need to be applied to how the body is actually designed to move outside of the weight room. And I could argue that they don't necessarily need to be applied to the body inside the weight room, but if we have a design to move, I think we're best served to live in that design, and honor it. And then everything will just work better.
Honor it. That's a good word for it. It's interesting you mentioned the rocking is a greater milestone or more significant than crawling, and so some people don't crawl, but that's, I would assume, just out of parental behavior if a kid doesn't crawl.
It's multifactorial. It could be, not all kids crawl, and then some kids do, but not all kids that do crawl spend the same amount of time crawling. They can rush through the stage sooner than they need to. And some spend an extraordinary amount of time crawling. Somebody said there's research out there that the kids that spend the longest time crawling end up being the better athletes. You could convince me that that's true. I'm not certain that that's an actual
research. That'd be hard to study.
Right, exactly. However, a child number two may not spend as much time crawling because child number one is up walking.
Oh, interesting.
And we have mirror neurons, monkey see, right. Monkey do. Like child number two may want to start walking faster. Only child may have parents that take a great amount of pride in how quickly Johnny was walking. So they may encourage Johnny to not crawl as much to get him walking sooner than he actually needs to. Child number three could be so fried because one and two are crawling and walking everywhere that they can't even watch him anymore. So they put him in some like stroller with wheels, so that they don't have to watch him and he can stay out of trouble. So it can be so different for every person. And then you got these kids that they do crawl, but they don't crawl forward. Maybe they crawl backwards more than they crawl forwards. Maybe they crawl on three limbs more than they crawl on four. Like we're just all a little bit different. And that's kind of the beauty of it.
Gotcha. It's hard to overestimate the power of training crawling patterns. Like getting like strong in ways that you wouldn't think you could be. I have a personal experience with it. I remember back when I started doing this stuff, practicing, I was working on a lift and I was working on a pistol squat. And I was like, I made like no progress after like a long time. And I've never been like a really strong guy, but I was always like, you know, strong enough for, you know, stronger than the average person, but not strong for like regular gym goers. And and I just couldn't get anywhere on it. And for listeners, the pistol squat is just squatting on one leg with the other leg straight out in front of you. It's a novelty lift. It's not necessary. It's just like an ego thing. There were a lot of people doing it at the time that in my life, and I just wanted to do it. But I worked at it for like well over a year, and I made like almost no measurable progress. I don't know what it was about my stability or lack of it or whatever, but I just couldn't do it. And then it was right around the time I started crawling, and I had a coach that had me like doing these loaded crawls where I would just drag a sled and I would crawl maybe 30, 40 yards or something, or no, probably 20 yards, maybe five or six times throughout a session, three times a week. And I had long like given up the pistol squat experiment, so I wasn't even training it anymore. Like it was a lost cause. And then one day in my house, and I don't know why this was videoed, but I just like went for it and I did one. And there's this expression on my face like, what the F just happened? How did that happen? And the only thing that I could like attribute it to it was like the crawling. It was like this like getting just so better integrated, like integrating all my ability to produce force, but getting it to like merge with my nervous system in a way that I could then deploy and utilize whatever force I had in all these different directions that was that I just didn't have access to. And it became kind of easy, surprisingly.
Yes.
Not that I could do it. It was like, oh, this isn't even like this weird, challenging thing anymore. And I just had it on lock for like years after that.
It's just there.
It was just weird. It was like that was one of the things that made me a believer about its like far-reaching abilities. It kind of can get you strong all over.
Yes. It gives you access to your strength.
Yeah, it gives you access.
Like, and I had a very similar experience. Like I would try the one arm, one leg push-up. You know, and I was reading Pavel's manuals and I was doing all the techniques and it was, I just couldn't do it no matter how. And it was also mentally exhausting, like all the mental checks and everything I had to do to try to pull it off. And then one day I'm just laying on the floor. This is after several months of crawling around and just playing, you know, playing with the resets. I was just laying on the floor and I popped up from a one arm, one leg push-up and it was effortless. And like, I could not believe how easy it was, especially when just trying to do it was so exhausting, you know, before. And I hadn't been trying, you know, I gave it up to, I wrote it off. I was like, well, maybe it's a circus trick. I don't know. And then I just found that it was just naturally in my system and I could do it whenever I wanted to without any of the tension techniques or the effort that it would, you know, that it, I was told it took and that I just couldn't master. Right. So and, it was just neat.
For the listeners, I mean, it might sound absolutely absurd to hear like adults talking about crawling and it might seem like something internally, like I would never do that. That sounds ridiculous. But there are ways to practice crawling that don't take up a lot of space, that, you know, aren't as strange as one might think if you haven't like seen different variations. But
you can disguise it.
You can disguise it. You can disguise it. Yeah, it's a good way to put it. But I mean, all of my clients over the years have been crawling in some way or another, whether they know it or not. And nobody complains, really. I mean, it's a great thing to practice. And it's definitely it's just one of those things. All these things have just stood the test for me. They're all like just part of my staple go to things. And it, the nice thing about a lot of these original strength patterns that you focus on, it's hard to overdo this stuff. I mean, you could get carried away with loads and probably do too much. Or if your neck is unconditioned and you're trying to hold it up really high and you're not ready for that and you haven't kind of paid your dues to let your body adjust, you could have some negative responses. But that would just be like, I wouldn't say inappropriate training, but like just, you know, not good thinkery around your approach. But you could just do so much of this. And it just seems like it's all good. Like the more, the better. And it doesn't draw from other aspects of your life. Like if you're like, oh, I love deadlifting. I want to do it every day. That'll go really well until it doesn't. And then it will detract. You'll be pouring from your cup to a point where it's going to show up in a myriad ways. It could be injuries. It could be your insomnia. It could be hormonal stuff. It could be grumpiness, like whatever. Like you can't overcrawl, putting aside like the more advanced versions where you're loading it funky. Like you just can't overdo this stuff. And it's just interesting, which is very like telling. It's like, yeah, this is good for you. These are like your basic vitamins of movement, your basic essential vitamins and minerals. These like developmental sequence based patterns.
Yeah, they're foundational. And they allow you to do everything else you want to do better.
So the last pattern, walking, you mentioned something earlier, like walking is a reset, but only if you're, I don't know how you said it, like only if you're tied together.
If you're tied together, well, yeah.
Yeah, touch on that.
So if crawling is the miracle movement, it hands the baton over to walking. And so you got to look at your gait pattern as getting from one place to another. The human body is designed to walk on 2 feet, but the foundational pattern for that is crawling on your hands and knees. Well, that's 4 limbs. So if your foundational pattern uses four limbs, then your ultimate pattern should also use four limbs. So when we walk from one place to another, our shoulders should still mirror our hips. That contralateral movement that happens when you crawl should still happen when you walk. And you see it in a sprinter. There's no getting around it. A good world-class sprinter, you see clearly the opposite limbs dancing and mirroring together. That's the ultimate expression. And for those sprinters, that's a reset, because they are living in their design, and that is the ultimate expression of the gait pattern. But so for the rest of us, though, that aren't Olympic sprinters, walking would be like that ultimate expression, but it should still be those four limbs dancing with one another. What that means is walking is not a two-leg event only. Matter of fact, you're not going to fully stimulate your brain like crawling does if you're only using two limbs to walk. So you're missing like half your information in the brain, all that wonderful connectivity from your left hemisphere to your right hemisphere. You're also missing the connection of your sling systems and your torso, the connection between your shoulders and your hips. If you're not using it, you're losing it. So in the absence of that pattern of all four limbs dancing together, a person's not really well connected. And then walking is not a reset, and it's not restorative for the brain and the soul and the emotions, as it should be.
Yeah. Walking is medicine. I mean,
it is
medicine. And the nice thing about walking too is like, it's the ultimate multitask. You could get out, you could be barefoot, you could be grounded, you could be getting sunshine, you could be thinking through your problems of the day, you could be taking in content, you could be learning, you could get so much done, and it's so easy. I'm always surprised in my neighborhood, there's like, you get like three, you know, there's like a handful of people that you'll see walking.
You see the same ones all the time.
And like so many people are just like, If you only knew how much better your life would be by just getting out, even if it was just once a day, even if it was just 10 minutes, like it is better than any pill you're going to be able to get from your doctor.
It is. It's amazing. But like you said, it helps you overcome problems. It helps you solve problems. It helps you regulate your brain, calm your emotions. It helps you become creative. But it also connects you to the world. Like walking's the thing that gets you out into the world and makes you a part of it. Like where you can feel the breeze on your skin, the sun on your skin, you can hear the birds, you can hear the rustling of the leaves or the honking of the horns, whatever. It still puts you out in the world.
I agree. I'm really fortunate. I have some woods in my backyard, and I've made a little walking trail, and it's like a 4 to 5 minute loop. And sometimes it's just like, I'm just going to go do one loop, and it's like 4 or 5 minutes. And like, you come back and you're not the same person when you left. And it's like, you know, 5 minutes.
That's it.
So I assume you still integrate all this stuff into your life regularly.
Yes.
Do you still lift? Like, do you even lift, bro? Do you do anything somebody would call like traditional exercise?
So that's a funny question. Last year me would say, absolutely no, not this year's me, because I'm in seasons. Like and this is wild, because this makes it so much fun for me though, because the first 25 years of my training career was just lifting weights. That's all I knew. And then when I discovered Original Strength, I walked away from all of it. Like I spent the majority of my time crawling and playing with that.
I remember seeing a video, maybe I'm wrong, of you like crawling like a mile. Yep, like knee up, crawling from, I think you had gloves on your hands or something.
I did, because I was on concrete some of that time.
But for the listeners, just for perspective, that's madness. Like the difficulty of that is so unique. I was like, you are trying to be Superman. That was very odd to see you pull that off. I applaud you for the effort. I would never attempt that.
Well, it was madness, and I have since come to my senses.
took the same like ego based problems of the lifting world and just applied it to your new.
I just applied it to crawling. Right. Yeah. What I learned from doing all of that is that, man, you can be ridiculously strong doing the simplest of things. But this year, in 2025, I don't know what happened. I got a bug up my butt. And, you know, because I own a fitness center and I'm teaching people how to lift weights all the time. I've been doing it for years because, like, I know what they need. They need to crawl and they need to rock. They need to roll. So I try to give them that. But what they want to do is lift weights. So I got to give them both, right? So I'm teaching people how to lift weights for years. And then this year, I'm like, you know what? I haven't done it in, what, I don't know, a decade? I don't know. It's been such a long time. So I picked up a barbell. I was like, oh, I kind of like this. So right now, in the last few months, I have been lifting weights, but just two or three times a week. And it's just fun. But I still crawl every single day. I carry loads every single day for the most part. So, but yeah, so I still do my resets and my crawling. I've just now added a little bit of weight training to see how it goes.
Oh, great.
And I don't know how long I'll do that for, but right now I'm enjoying it.
Well, Barbro, you know, you build a very beautiful relationship with a barbell. I mean, every tool has its own, like, relationship that you build with it. And
yeah,
they all have their, like, pros. There's no solutions. It's just trade-offs. What I do find, though, you know, a lot of the benefits of, let's say, a barbell is the way that you could load it and the way that you could put tension on mechanical stress on the body and get all the benefits from that comes with that. But also all the because the barbell is so unforgiving of a tool, there's a lot of tension in the body when moving it, which isn't inherently bad. But as I find, as I get older, the more lifting with that, even though if I get benefits like strength or muscle, the more tension, because you're like practicing tension, the more tense you become. And I feel like the more I need to be balancing that out with more nourishing activities, whether it's original strength or traditional like stretching or yoga. It's like you always need some kind of balance in your life. And as you get older, those relationships that you find balance in change.
And yeah, so... And it is neat. Like I said, I'm enjoying it right now, and what I've noticed, so for the last 3 months, I still move. Like, I feel good. But like I said, I haven't quit crawling. I haven't quit rocking and rolling. Like, I do those every single day and I'll do them until I leave here. Because I believe in them so much, but I also know that those are the things I'm supposed to do. Weightlifting is just extracurricular.
Gotcha. Well, you, one thing that I also, that stood out also when I met you in person, like, you move with an exceptional grace. Like, there's a graceful strength that you manifest in your body that is really something. Like, when I think, you know, I've been an observer of movement for a long time, and there's a handful of people that just stand out. It's like, wow, look at that, how that guy moves. And you're on that short list, man. It's,
That's awesome.
You're on that short list.
And the crazy thing is, that's not how it started, though. Right. I used to look like a train wreck.
Yeah, I believe it. I mean, I move well, like, maybe not to an exceptional mover, but like compared to the average population, I move well. And like, I could demonstrate something in the gym on the fly and have, like, you know, I don't want to brag, but I got pretty good form with stuff. I mean, I've nerded out on the form stuff for so long. Right. But I really attribute my ability to, like, at 47 and a half, I could walk out and I could do cartwheels or whatever, like, without a moment, with no preparation. And I attribute all that stuff to just because I'm on a floor every day. Like,
right.
I can, if I need to just demonstrate a handstand, push-up variation, whatever, without any warm-up, it's like, the reason I could do that is because I roll around every day on the floor. It's not because I do handstand push-up practice every day. It's because I do baby shit all the time.
Yes.
And it just, like, keeps like everything working. Keeps allows, like you said, it gives you access to your strength.
It does. And I think you said it best earlier when you were like, if you want to be young, do the thing that young people do. And so spending time on the floor is the proving grounds for youth. It's just awesome.
Yeah, kids are, they're our greatest teachers. It's not just in that context. I mean, if you look at what kids do, they don't care what other people think about them. They're quick to, like, dance or cry or scream or sing. They get on the floor. They get dirty. They don't care if they ruin their clothes with, like, there's a lot we could be learning from kids as adults.
Absolutely.
Well, Tim, I really appreciate you coming on to the podcast. It has been great to connect with you after all these years. And again, I'm grateful for all the stuff you've done. And I know you do have a new book coming out. You mentioned it's a revision of your first book. It's Pressing Reset Original Strength Forever. Is that, yes. Did I say that right?
You did.
Okay. And this is just basically taking all the things you've learned since your first one and kind of touching up the old ideas?
Yeah, it's a lot of the conversation that we just had. And like I said, over like the first iteration of that book was in 2011. I'm hopeful that I'm just better able to explain how we're designed to move now than I was able to back then.
And is it available yet? Or
it pre-sales are supposed to be May 1st, and it should be available for actual sale, I think June 6th or 7th.
Okay, so by the time this is being aired, probably pre-sales available. So if people want to do that, is that on Amazon or where do they go?
Yeah, it would be on Amazon.
Okay, well, for the listeners, I'm always grateful for your listening. I really encourage you to check out Original Strength. And if, you know, anybody that wants to improve their performance or if you just want to feel better in your body, I think there's a lot of people that just feel like they deserve to feel better and they don't know what to do and they don't want to go to a traditional gym and just wail away on weights. If you want something that you could access anywhere, I mean, you just need a little bit of room on the floor or a little bit of space in your backyard, then explore and see what it has to offer for you. Tim, I really appreciate you taking the time. It's been great to talk to you, man.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. This was a lot of fun.
All right. Have a good day, everybody.